All right. Hello, everyone, and hello, brethren. Welcome back to a very cool new version of All Good in the Brotherhood, where we are distant, but we are more together than just over the phone. So we have invested in some visual distance software, and this is our first time trying it out. So fingers crossed that it doesn't sound or look too bad, but yeah. So how are you guys doing? You're holding your body heat in today? Because at least when I woke up, it said it was negative 16.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's about that over here right now. And not the day to do anything outdoors, really. Except freeze, get frostbite.
Yeah, we...
If you're into that, I don't know.
We've been having the wood stove going. We had to go for most of yesterday afternoon and pretty much all of today, which is just hopefully taking a little bit of pressure off of the heating unit. And I've literally been like going around like finding like places where cold air is coming in and like taping over it. So very daddish day here. So
yet somehow on campus, I still saw the dummies who were wearing shorts. It's like, you know, dude, like, what are you trying to do? I guess, yeah, you know what? But just because they're in college doesn't mean necessarily intelligence is
part of it.
It generally, it's like the opposite, actually. Like, the higher the education you go, some of your practical sense just goes downhill.
Yeah.
So, speaking... Go ahead, Nate.
No, other than like talking about the cold, like good Midwesterners, what should we talk about today?
That's fair. Well, I was going to say, since we're talking about the weather... and the cold, and we're using technology into a new way for the first time, I thought we could discuss the relationship between faith and the environment, and whether or not a Catholic can say that they are truly an environmentalist. I mean, some people would probably be like, yeah, duh, podcast over, answer is solved. But if the answer is yes or the answer is no, then we should talk about it. So especially since, you know, we've been told that there's global warming. I know they call it climate change now, which is, like, different. But if it's global warming, bro, I don't know what's going on outside. But not global warming.
I think they conveniently dropped the term global warming maybe a decade ago because it was too specific. Now, by using the term climate change, environmentalists can be a little bit more like flexible. So if there's a hot year, they can say, oh, look at this, it's climate change. If there's a very cold year, they can say, oh, look, climate change. Because, you know, whether or not the planet is heating up is debatable, but the fact that the climate always changes is pretty much undebatable. So it's more easy to weaponize that kind of
technology.
And just randomly, real quick, since you brought that up, I recently heard some news anchor of some sort of leftist news source talking about correlating the wildfires in California with climate change. And he's talking about how basically he was blown away that the general public seems to not be making that connection. Because he's going off of Google searches. So he's looking up the percentage of Google searches relating to wildfires, like how many people have typed in wildfire in Google has gone up drastically recently. It's like more than ever before. It's like 2400% of ever before, but the rates of Googling the phrase climate change have not gone up significantly. So this anchor was saying, like, I'm just blown away, like, people aren't making this connection. People are stupid, basically. And it was just sort of comical, because, like, well, there's always the possibility that maybe the general public isn't stupid, and maybe they just recognize that wildfires happen in hot parts of the country. But anyway,
Nate, just a note. Could you hold the mic a little closer to your mouth? Perfect. Thanks. That's funny. However, people use the environment to push a political agenda rather than pushing, like, human flourishing, I find very interesting. I mean, there's lots of different directions we can go with this. I have actually a lot of, I guess, research and or study in my time in seminary actually has been around our relationship with the environment, both as just creatures and humans, but also particularly our Catholic approach. I think the best place to start is probably what most people think nowadays when they hear the idea of, like, care of creation or care of the environment and Catholicism, which is the Pope Francis's encyclical Laudato Si, which, you know, depending on who you are, you might roll your eyes thinking like, oh, wow, really the Pope should be spending his time with other things in the church and not with environment. And I have to say, I was one of those people until I actually read it, because I thought, oh, yeah, dude, like, with all of the war going on in the world, or like the freaking German bishops, like, I think the Pope should focus on like the church rather than like this whole thing.
Right.
But actually, there's, I mean, there's a lot to it, and there's two particular things I wanted to talk about. And the first is what he calls the technocratic paradigm, which I don't know if you guys have ever heard that phrase before, but basically, it's him. He sees as an issue in the world that we have created this paradigm or this idea, this reality, that all problems in humanity and all problems in the world find their solution only in a scientific advancement or in a technological like creation or, you know, progress, versus God or, you know, community or another human person. That science and technology become the answer to everything. And as a result, then we have to force creation and the world to bend to the will of science and technology in order to create for ourselves the solution to our own created problems. And he says that the more we push the need for basically ride on technology as like our main source for everything, the more we're going to just deplete the world and use it as a means to an end rather than an end in and of itself. So, yeah, what do you guys think about that, and how do you – I certainly agree with the Pope in that regard, but what do you think about that, and how do you see that happening?
Yeah, one thing that just kind of made me think of too is I would wonder, you know, with that technocratic paradigm, if the base premise is base – it goes off of an idea of, say, man is intrinsically – good or intrinsically like fallen, like are we fallen, and do we suffer from the struggle of, you know, pride, greed, sin ultimately being a factor that will always affect our decisions and how we interact with creation, or are we good? And the reason why I ask that, because I think it would be easy to fall into that false idea that technology and material, some sort of material advancement, will always answer a human, which is good, but it's just materially motivated. So we just need stuff. Like, we have the base needs, and I feel like environmentalism often goes hand in hand with ideas about like resource scarcity, and, you know, the fact that we need to maintain and like ration, if you will, the environment so that we have enough to be sustainable. But that's not really recognizing that's seeing humans as basically just like we have like a burn rate, and everything goes in and it comes out, and we have to sustain that. We have to build an environment which sustains that, as opposed to recognizing that like we will do things out of sinful inclinations, you know. And I think that's where, like, when you realize there's like this spiritual reason which sometimes puts us in a place where we pillage the earth, then that's when you can enter in like, well, what's the spiritual nourishment that we need so we don't do that? And the answer is not going to be technology. The answer is not going to be some new scientific advancement. It's going to be God. It's going to be a respect for his creation. So I would just wonder, yeah, like, and maybe you can even answer after Nate chimes in, like, is his perspective come with sort of base premises about human nature and why we treat the earth in that way? But Nate, your thoughts.
Yeah, first of all, I just want to acknowledge what you said, Tom, is really, really good point, that we often approach the idea of resource scarcity as if we are basically just a burn rate. Like, we take humanity as just this factor that just depletes resources. But for one thing, that's not always how it works. Like, for example, I've heard even Jordan Peterson speaks about this pretty vehemently, that, you know, we kind of sometimes speak of humans as if they were yeast. So, like, he's talking about in very simple cultures. By cultures, I mean like organism cultures. You know, if you put in a certain amount of resources, eventually it's just ultimately going to be all used up. And there's no way of basically reversing that or delaying that or finding new solutions. Ultimately, the very simple organism cultures, for example, yeast, will just use up the resources. But he's like, humans aren't yeast. And I think he said that very bluntly, but I think it's also true. Like we have found other ways to maintain sustainability that we weren't aware of hundreds of years ago. So it's not like we're just in this, you know, this inevitable game where we're just running out of resources constantly and that we're doomed. Because guess what? All the people that predicted the doom of mankind based on environmental factors, there have been people that have been predicting that for decades, and they always set some terminus, some date when all of our resources are going to be used up, the earth is going to effectively be useless and not to be able to sustain life. But continually, as they set these dates, those dates are proven wrong. Like there are people who thought that by the year 2000, life wasn't going to be sustainable on Earth. There are people who thought by the year 2020, life wasn't going to be sustainable. There are people who are predicting by 2050, life won't be sustainable. Judging from the way things are now, that doesn't seem to be totally true as a good prediction. So like some of that, I think the doomsday mentality with approaching the environment has just been proven consistently false to some extent. But like getting back to the passage from Laudato Si, yeah, I really like that reference you made, Sam, or sorry, Brother Francisco, to the technocratic paradigm. And interestingly enough, I think part of it comes down to this tendency for man, especially in our post-Christian secularized age, to set up man as the only hope for himself. So like the only hope for humanity is humanity itself, either through technological advancement or through our own explorations in sustainability or whatever. Basically, our material abilities are the only hope for mankind. And I was just thinking about this, or sorry, that just struck me, I guess, because earlier today I was doing some research just for fun on the Antichrist, because, you know, why not? What else you want to do research on a Thursday morning or Wednesday morning? I don't even know what day of the week it is. But and one of the features that it said that, you know, people have traditionally associated with the Antichrist, or one of the main signs that theologians have thought of, is that the Antichrist will have many good intentions and will offer lots of solutions for mankind to be happy and healthy and sustainable. But the way it will do that is not by pointing ever to God or to anything transcendent, but purely by pointing to humanity's advancements, either through technology or, you know, those kind of resources. And so it just strikes me that in our kind of technocratic age, that's a very common thing. And you hear this all the time whenever people are talking about hope for mankind. They're pointing to technology or the advancement of science or something as the exclusive hope for that. And that itself is just a whole kind of wrong framework in which to be thinking. It's a fundamentally secular framework and godless in a way. And so, yeah, I don't know. Those are just my thoughts. But.
There's certainly a running premise from the Pope about humanity's just consumeristic nature. And especially nowadays, like that's what we're pushed. There's just more product. You know, this next thing will make you happy. This next thing will satisfy. And as we find less and less things satisfy us, and the things that we did that used to satisfy us less now, we have to create more and more. But there is a little bit maybe of a loss of an idea that, like, you know, humanity is rational and that there is like some desire that it's not across the board, all of humanity. There's some desire to return to a place of sustenance and like reflect and self-sustaining. And like you said, Nate, we're not bacteria. Something that you were mentioning, Nate, is like, you know, we forget our need for God or God's place in our lives, and we kind of look for humanity as our own end. Pope Francis actually kind of mentions that when he says that in the very beginning of creation, because man was created both in relationship with God, in relationship with another person, but also in relationship to creation, right? His first command was to have dominion, to name the animals, to clearly have a connection with them. That the Pope says, like, man is created with a three-tiered relationship with God, humanity, and creation. And he says, when one of those is ruptured, it will naturally result in the degradation of the other two. So that if, you know, we cut off our connection with God, that one who shows us what is truth, what is good, what is beautiful, we begin to stop seeing that in his creation and other people. And we see that, you know, as secular pluralism and relativism and atheism become more common, and we just lose any idea of God or the transcendent, then all that there is us. And we then use rather than receive, rather than give. But Pope Francis is kind of approaching it from the other end. He says, well, if all you see creation as is some kind of means to an end, some kind of thing to just manipulate for my own benefit, then my relationship with another person becomes that very same thing, manipulation for my benefit. And when we destroy the image of God in another person, then the next thing to destroy is God. That God, even if I believe in him, will only be one who I use in order to get something. Or I only need God insofar as, you know, I might admit that I can't do everything, but God, you need to take care of these X, Y, Z things, but nothing else. I don't need you for anything else. I just want to use you. So prayer becomes a demand rather than a relationship. And Pope John Paul II actually talks about that too. He says the opposite of love is not hate, it's use. And that we have grown to love things and use people, but people should be loved and things used. But now we're just in this, yeah, consumeristic, you know, pull everything to me because of this technocratic paradigm. So in a paper I wrote actually about Laudato Si, I was showing that a misuse of the environment is actually a total distrust in the fatherhood of God. Because if I have to, say, in humanity and in whatever I create in order to pull from creation in order to feed my own ends, if that is what I must rely on, then it's because I must have control. It's all about me controlling, humanity controlling its own destiny, rather than to place in the hands of God our future. And he says in Matthew 6, or he says in Matthew 6, but also in Luke 12, you know, consider the lilies of the field. If God takes care of all of those and sparrows, right? You are worth more than many sparrows. And so have no anxiety at all for, you know, you actually, there's nothing you can control. But if God takes care of these things the way he does, then he will take care of you as well. So that's my next reaction. But what do you think as like, as that idea of, it's also just an innate desire to just control because I can't trust God. I don't want to trust another human person. So I'll just do everything I can to like trust myself and force control upon my entire system of life and upon the environment.
Yeah. I think one thing that you just mentioned, control, and, you know, entire system of life. And this kind of brought up something that I was just kind of reviewing ahead of our chat today, which is just that how significant of Karl Marx's early writings were actually about environmentalism. And he saw kind of in along the same lines of going with this premise about the technocratic paradigm, he saw not really mankind as actually being the problem. He saw capitalism as being the problem. And the reason why, like, we were pillaging the earth is because capitalistic industrialism was growing rapidly. Its use of resources, the factories, you know, and just kind of growing up in that context and seeing that context and seeing the harsh nature of that is what led him in his early on political writing career to focus more actually on environmentalism. And it was later on that he started getting into like the solution to that was this idea of, you know, communism, Marxism, socialism. But yeah, I think what's interesting, just again, the phrase is control and whole way of life, is Marx saw, yeah, socialism, communism, Marxism as the solution to creating a system of control over the whole way of life to answer the problem of environmentalism. But again, failing to recognize that the root problem was kind of humanity's nature. You know, again, that's back to like Marx is seeing mankind as like yeast in, you know, burn through out. Like there's almost like a steady pulse that you could always expect of mankind. Mm-hmm. And that theoretically we could regulate that. Theoretically we could come up with a way where there's a rational regulation, I think is a phrase that he brings up. And, you know, it's failing to recognize that there's going to be an inclination to that destruction if we are failing to recognize the truth, beauty, and goodness. Instead, we are only seeing it as a means to an end. We're only seeing, you know, this planet as like a thing with fixed amounts of carbon and fixed amounts of, you know, nowadays it's rare earths. Rare earths are critical mm-hmm. to building mm-hmm. batteries. And of course, there's a lot of churn over like, where are these located and how are they being used and who controls them? So yeah, I don't know if that exactly answers the question. At an individual level, I think, yeah, there's just that base start, and it's recognizing truth, beauty, and goodness in God's creation is one way to be, in my mind, a good Catholic environmentalist, if we're going to create a label like that. Because you can't help but look at a mountainside or a sunrise or a forest or an ocean or a lake or a river and kind of be taken aback by the inherent beauty that is there. And it's not something that we're meant to just go in and just like sort of grab a handful of and bring it, put it in our pocket and stuff it in a jar at home. That's not what it's meant for. And while we do have dominion over the earth, we don't have dominion over truth, beauty, and goodness, you know? And that's not something that we can just jar up and say, this is ours, you know? So yeah, I'm not sure that hits the question you were getting at, but it's just some words that stood out. Nate, go for it.
Yeah, no, I think that was relevant, Tom. And I think really as far as solutions go and how we can approach being a Catholic environmentalist, you hit the nail on the head as far as just acknowledging the transcendent beauty that we see evident in creation. And I think part of that's really helpful because it reminds us of our smallness. You know, they always say when you look up at the stars and you think about how vast our universe is and even how vast our planet is, it makes you realize just how small you are in a way and how... Mm-hmm. Not that we're irrelevant, because of course, like you said, Sam, our Lord says you're worth more than many sparrows. You know, we have so much value in the Father's eyes. And yet, although we are relevant, we are important, and we each have a role, we are objectively small, and we should be humbled and recognize our small place in the universe. And I think some of that can actually help our approach to environmental policies even, because Sam, you brought up that basically... You know, we have this over tendency to want to control everything. Environmental policies can be an expression of just our general desire to control things. But I think that's also accompanied, for people to take that stance, it also has to be accompanied by an implicit assumption that you can control the environment, which takes, I think, a certain amount of egotism and pride to think that just some human beings can control the environment and do with it what they want, for better or for worse. And so sometimes just recognizing our smallness in the universe and the fact that it is going to do what it will do, whether we intervene or not, to some extent. Obviously, we can contribute in some ways more or less, but like overall, the environment is going to change. There's going to be climate change. There's going to be development between, you know, everywhere from going back centuries ago to the Ice Age to nowadays. It's gone through many changes, often disregarding what human beings and human society was or was not doing. So it's kind of good to just look at the beauty of creation and also the vastness of it and recognize how small we are. And in some sense, how irrelevant some of our actions might be. But on the other hand, I think it's important to point out, while we're recognizing how beautiful and how big the universe is, to also recognize that it is just a work of creation that God gave us for our good. Because Tom, of course, like you said, you don't want to go to the extreme where you treat every natural resource or every portion of our planet as purely a means to a utilitarian end. But it is important to remember that God, you know, when he introduced the animals to Adam, he said, you know, have dominion over these. He gave Adam the ability to name the creatures and to assign their rightful duties and to use animals in a way as tools for the betterment of humanity. We often kind of have that reverse nowadays. Often people have more sympathy for animals than they do for human beings. Like if a puppy dies, people are in grieving for years and years. But, you know, abortion happens daily to an insane degree, and people don't even bat an eye at it, right?
Yeah.
And so we do have a reversal that almost to the point of, I would say, a modern-day paganism, where people speak of the environment as this sort of god, this kind of
Mother Nature.
Deity of sorts. Yeah, Mother Nature is treated as this divine being that we kind of encounter, but she's so much bigger than all the trees and the mountains. And so, and we willingly sacrifice our children to her. We sacrifice our happiness to her. We sacrifice even our own convenience by saying, well, no, you can't have gas cars. You should have electric cars, even though maybe they're actually not as efficient. Or, yeah, you shouldn't wear these kind of clothes or consume these kind of foods. You should only do this or that. That basically is most reverent and gives the most sacrifice to our goddess Mother Nature. That's sometimes how we approach environmentalism.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of danger there. We should recognize that Mother Nature is that nature is a beautiful thing, but we shouldn't treat it as some sort of deity that we sacrifice all of our convenience to, or even our, in the form of abortion, our own children, right? Because that is traditionally one of the big reasons why some people push for abortion, is they just say it's, you know, a remedy for overpopulation. And so while they wouldn't say this outright, what they're saying is that environment out there, the trees and the forests and the oceans, they're worth more than human beings. And we never want to say that. We never want to go that far. What we should say is that those oceans and those trees and those mountains and all the good resources that we find in them are good because they can be useful to helping human life flourish, rather than the other way around.
Yeah. And just one thing kind of like related to that, and back to a point you said a minute ago, we can't control it. I think that's a good one to keep in mind, because, you know, if we think we have to limit, we'll say, the growth of humanity through abortion, contraception, whatever, you know, it's probably because we think we kind of have nature figured out. We kind of know what it's capable of, you know, and we kind of know it's, you know, and the idea of like finite resources, you know, I think from a basic laws of physics sense makes some rational sense. There's not like, you know, things don't seem to just sort of materialize out of nothing, but it does kind of come with this base premise that we know enough about nature to know that, well, we got to stop at some point because it's not infinite. So let's just stop now, you know, let's start hampering the growth of our, you know, humanity now. And, you know, like there's so many small and like anecdotal examples of like mankind messing with nature and then with some intended output, but not knowing like, oh, you're going to create all these other side effects. And I know like, two that come to mind, and I even learned about these in, funny enough, in environmentalism class in college. And one was when they tried to repopulate wolves in Yellowstone, they're like, oh, we want to do this. We know this is going to be better because wolves were pretty much all killed at a certain point in Yellowstone. Yellowstone had plentiful caribou and elk. And so they reintroduced wolves. And funny enough, they almost wipe out the caribou. You know, and all of a sudden caribou are an endangered species, if you will, in Yellowstone. And I know there's another really interesting one with a type of fish in some sort of, I think it's local to like where we're at, somewhere in Pennsylvania. And they were trying to sort of reintroduce the growth in like the rivers and streams. And so they affected the process of like, you know, incubating basically fish and getting them introduced more into the rivers. And I think there's even some involvement in like actual chemical modifications. And then through a phrase, big word, biomagnification, they actually ended up killing birds of prey because they were affecting these fish. And then these fish were getting eaten by ospreys, eagles, etc. And then that chemical, while it didn't immediately affect the bird, it affected the shells. So when they would, you know, give birth to their young, the shells were too brittle and they would break before the babies could grow. So again, whenever we try to play with nature, we just don't get it. We don't understand the second, third order, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, infinite effects of what we're trying to affect. You know, and a great film to see that in is Jurassic Park. I just had to make a plug. I had to make a plug there for good old Jurassic Park. And joke theory, though it may seem...
I'm going to mute you.
Life finds a way.
Yeah, well, actually...
Tom finds a way to introduce Jurassic Park.
so much wisdom in Jurassic Park.
There was a period of time where Tom would go to the thrift store and try to buy every VHS copy of Jurassic Park that he could get his hands on.
As if just for the sake of collecting, because we have plenty already in our basement.
Yeah, it was a prestigious collection. I just wanted to make sure that there was no VHS was left behind.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll close that.
So with that derail, but you're not wrong in that principle, and you know, and your examples are of animals. But I think Pope Francis, he doesn't directly talk about this, but I think something you can infer from it is what he says about, you know, if you treat one thing that you're in relationship with one way, you treat all of them that way. That if we try to control like the creation and earth and animals, like the next step is to control humanity. And you think about, like you said, like genomic or, you know, biochemical engineering or editing, that's exactly where we want to go next. CRISPR-Cas9 is a protein that can be used for genome editing. And while it's not approved for human genome editing in the United States or in most countries, there has been people, I think a doctor in China kind of did it under the radar, but he had the financial backing to do it, to edit the genome of two twin children so that they could not contract HIV/AIDS. And the whole premise was like, oh, this is amazing. Like, we have hit a point in, you know, scientific progress that we can now actually have like children who are incapable of certain diseases. But the consequence is that they were actually susceptible to other things. And then another example is, if you've ever heard of a process called three-parent embryo, but it's where a mother has maybe a genetic disease that's associated with her mitochondria. It doesn't affect her, but it would affect her offspring. So using IVF, they'll extract a mitochondria of a healthy egg from a third person, implant that into the egg of the current mother, and then fertilize that egg. And why this is such a problem is that a mitochondria is not only the powerhouse of the cell, that's what everyone knows about it, but it actually has its own type of RNA, mRNA, it's what's called, mitochondrial RNA. And RNA directly affects DNA of the individual. So now you're having children, and in Mexico this was allowed for a while, I don't know if it still is, but at least I think back in 2015 is when they first started having these children that now literally have genes and DNA of three people, not two. And we yet do not know the full scientific, psychological, sociological impact that is going to have on their development. But if we try to force creation to become the way we want and to do everything we want, then the next thing to do is to force humanity to become and do the thing we want, which is why there is a need for Catholicism to, you know, touch and to join itself with some form of ecology and environmentalism. And to respond to something you said, Nate, about like, well, creation was given to us, you know, for man's benefit. That's a very Thomistic thing. Actually, Thomas Aquinas talks about like the role of creation in man. And he said, he says in the Summa, like man by God's design is given, he even uses the word tyrannical domain over creation. That like we get to decide what happens with it. And it's not like us serving creation, it's creation serving us. But very clearly, how does creation serve? And I did a research project a while ago on like, can Aquinas be viewed through an environmental lens? And there's a lot of debate on that, honestly. But one of the biggest things is his understanding of the word stewardship as rooted in justice. And that if care of creation is a fruit of divine justice, so the justice that, you know, encapsulates all of that exists, God's own justice, then there has to be a extent to which we don't just use creation, but also contribute to its own continued sustenance, and that we don't manipulate it for our ends, but use it for our good. Only insofar as it can be used for good would he say we become tyrannical in a sense. If it's used for anything other than that, then it's just like you would have a dictator. You know, he might be leading well, but then if he starts doing something poorly with his leadership, it goes awry. So yeah, I know, like going crazy. But there's one last thing, something Pope Francis mentions kind of as a vision for how to look at the environment is what he says is its sacramentality. So the definition of a sacrament is an outward sign instituted by Christ through which grace is dispensed to us. Well, creation is a sign sign of God's love, a sign of God's power, of his desire to grow us, to, you know, develop us, to have a relationship with us, to give us everything we need. So it is a sign. So it has a sacramental nature to it because it points to God. But also that it is through nature itself that we have the sacraments, because it is bread, it is wheat, it is wine, it is oil, all of these things that God raised something that was natural to a supernatural level. And so a misuse of creation loses a vision of the power that it has in order to actually give grace to us through the imposition of the priest's hands and the power of the Holy Spirit. And so that Hildegard of Bingen, who's a Benedictine from like the, I think the 13th century, doctor of the church, she actually said that like creation is the very like demonstration of God's vitality, of his very life within us. And that greenness is a sign of the Holy Spirit's presence in the world. So any kind of manipulation of it is a try to manipulate God's own power ourselves rather than to let God's power be given to us through it. And she mentions that all of creation was created for the sake of the incarnation, for Christ to become human. So any forcing of our will upon it is almost to deny that the incarnation was the principle by which creation exists. So that's a lot, I know. So respond to any, all, or none of it, but your thoughts. We'll start with Nate on this one.
All right, fair warning. This laptop has very, speaking of sustainability, this is very low battery sustainability. So when I started out this session, it was basically at full battery. And now it just warned me that it's about to shut down. So I'm going to go as long as I can.
Okay.
But okay, first of all, just to the sacramentality. Yeah, I love that. That's really important for us to remember that creation is symbolic in a way. And even particular aspects of the way organic life functions point to eternal realities. For example, we always say the family is a sign of the Trinity, but to some extent, you know, wherever we find reproduction in creation, you see some sort of symbol of the Trinity. You know, it's the one comes together with another and it is, becomes three, and yet there's this sort of unity about that. Whether you're dealing with humans or lions or any other organism that reproduces in that way, there's some sort of sign right there of the Trinity. And yeah, it's just, it's remarkable because, wow, there are so many things you said that were like really worthwhile. But I wanted to acknowledge the point on whether or not Thomas Aquinas can be read in an environmentalist way. I think it's important to realize that it doesn't have to be a dichotomy between like whether you're just using something or like treating with ultimate respect just for its own sake. I think we can bridge that gap by saying you can use something, but properly. Using something doesn't mean using it in this aggressive, destructive way that's only going to eliminate the good or the beauty of the thing itself. For example, you can use a car in one sense, meaning you just drive, say you got like a nice convertible.
Well, I think we lost him. I'm assuming the point he was going to make was that you can use a car for the purpose at which it was made. And it can lead you to where you want to go. It allows you to do the things you need to do, and probably more than you could do if you didn't have a car to get you there. But you can also use the car to a destructive end, like wreck other people, hit other people, be at risk for yourself and other people's lives. So proper, like you said, it's not like this, you know, dichotomy, like you have to be one or the other. There's a proper use of something that actually almost is a respect of what it is to be used properly. So sorry we lost you, Nate. We love you. You're great. Plug in your laptop next time. anyways, Tom, any final thoughts or reactions to things that you want to mention?
I thought something Nate brought up, and since you teed up the phrase, the sacramentality of creation, you know, and he tied it in, you know, just kind of a reminder of like how the act of marital intimacy is what consummates the marriage, the sacrament of marriage. So the sacramentality of intimacy is another thing which like I don't think a lot of people wrap their head around, or even if you can kind of like notionally get it, it's harder to digest. You know, it's harder to like sort of see, oh, okay, yeah, this thing that we, that, you know, God gave to us, our sexuality, is something that is actually part of our ability to interact with the sacrament of marriage. So yeah, just thinking of it in that sense, that like creation is an interaction with the sacraments, you know, and how, yeah, life begetting life, like Nate said. And it's not to say necessarily that like, yeah, lions on the Serengeti are engaged in marital intimacy, you know, when they make lion babies. But just that analogy there, that like, that's something that God gave to all of creation. And, you know, the ability of life to beget life is incredible. You know, whether it's trees growing, grass growing, you know. So yeah, no real significant thoughts. But this was a great topic, Brother Francisco.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Bummed that Nate got cut out, but he still offered some good ones to close. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's actually okay. We didn't like speak about like some practicalities. I like to try to do that. Like, what are some practicalities? But I think I want to leave that open to the listeners to figure it out. Like, based on these principles, what would you do? Maybe leave that in a comment below. Like, based on, you know, the things we shared, the vision that we are supposed to have, either by Pope Francis, Thomas Aquinas, Hildegard of Bingen, you know, lots of people, or a Marxist, as Tom said, like, whatever vision you have of the world, how could you respond in faith, but in a way that also shows care for the very thing that God has given to us? So leave that comment below. We'd love to share in the conversation. Also, if you want to share more in the conversation, tune in 2 days on Saturday at 2:00 Eastern time. All three boys will be together in the same place, live streaming, with some big announcements. We'll be answering your guys' questions if you have any, you know, ranging from, you know, like really serious stuff to like the most goofy things, like what's the most wild thing you've seen in the monastery? What's the craziest thing your children, Tom, have done in order to hide all the chocolate they're eating, Gemma? So, if you're interested in that, stay tuned. We have a big announcement coming up. We're moving in a new direction. I'm really excited about all the stuff that we're going to be doing within the next year. It's really spicy, to borrow Mr. Camden Sarver's word. You don't know who that is, but we do. So, thank you all for joining us. You're great. You're wonderful. This is All Good in the Brotherhood podcast. I'm Brother Francisco. That's Tom. Have a wonderful day.
God bless. Take care.